On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Before, I was all work, you know, traveling internationally, like taking every single job, because what if, and you're so lucky to get anything, any job. But my psychiatrist did not think that was advisable.
In the new Netflix series, Lady Dynamite, comedian Maria Bamford plays a version of herself, trying to regain her footing following a battle with mental illness that forced her to take a break for treatment. Bamford and the show's co-creator, Pam Brady, talk about how they keep the real Bamford sane while she plays the semi-fictional Bamford on TV. But first on the News Banter, Ben Affleck, how sane is he? Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my ally in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Bill Simmons debuted his very expensive HBO show this past Wednesday, Any Given Wednesday, with Bill Simmons, the former ESPN star and extremely widely read journalist. Bill Simmons started this, and instantly the first show went viral with a discussion by Ben Affleck. He was talking about Deflategate, which is the flap involving the New England Patriots, and did they deflate the balls to give them an advantage, and the penalty that was imposed on their quarterback. And, you know, it sounded a lot like if you were in a bar in Boston listening to some guys somewhat in their cups talking about the thing. And just to give you a sense of it, is I'm sure many people have heard it already because it's been all over the internet, but just a quick little snippet to give you the feel.
Deflategate is the ultimate bull outrage of sports ever. It's so stupid.
So that went on for a while.
A long while.
A long while.
Ben Affleck actually counted the number of F-bombs and tweeted an apology for saying 18 of them. He said he probably could have done with 12.
Yeah, well, he probably could have done with fewer. The internet immediately went crazy with speculation that he was not sober, basically. Was he drunk? Was he this? I have to say, he doesn't look well in this to me. You can argue, as some did, that he had probably just flown in from London and whatever. But Ben Affleck has a very troubled past and some very successful moments in his past, obviously. He's a multi-talented guy, actor and director, you know, Argo won Best Picture. So for me, I kind of hate when the media finds this so funny, because I feel like when people are maybe not well, the media immediately starts, and the internet generally, jumping up and down and saying, look at this hilarious moment. And to me, it's really kind of a cringeworthy moment. But I guess it works for Bill Simmons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the Bill Simmons show, this is a viral moment in the very first episode. I mean, this is a gigantic bet for HBO. They're paying this guy between $7 and $9 million, we've reported.
That's per season, I think, right? Not just
yeah, per year for his show. So they want people to be talking about this. They want people to be on HBO and go to their digital platform, HBO Now. So for Bill Simmons, this is a big win. But for Ben Affleck, I agree with you. And we don't know what was going on. We don't know what happened before the shoot or anything going on in his personal life. But there is a lot riding on Ben Affleck right now, from Warner Brothers in particular. He is Batman, and he is also executive producing the Justice League movies, which are shooting right now in London. He's also supposed to direct a standalone Batman movie, and he's directing this other Dennis Lehane adaptation, Live by Night. So Warner Brothers is heavily invested in the Ben Affleck business. So any kind of personal troubles would be problematic for them as well.
Really problematic. Ben Affleck is coming in as executive producer of the Justice League movies after Batman versus Superman. Kind of disappointed. Critics did not like it. Audiences obviously weren't crazy about it. And, you know, with the cost of these movies, making and marketing them, it's you want to do very, very well, especially launching these other films. So in London, they just had this event where Zack Snyder, the director of Justice League, was kind of talking to reporters and saying they were going to change the tone just weeks into shooting. The film won't be out until November. There were no stills available, as our friend Kyle Buchanan wrote on Vulture. It just seemed maybe like a little defensive in a way that, you know, you want them to address the problems, but this seemed a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. This was an apology tour. This was an attempt to change the narrative on the DC cinematic universe. You had Warner Brothers, who paid for all of these bloggers to come to London, put them up in a hotel, tour around a movie set while they were filming. It's very unusual that you allow journalists to come to a movie set and then publish their stories while it's filming.
Yeah, before the film is done, right.
Yeah, on-set reports typically have an embargo for far later down the line where you publish it in the run-up to the movie's release. But it was very clear that Zack Snyder and even Ben Affleck, who showed up in his Batman makeup to talk to these bloggers, and they were trying to change what is a very negative narrative on these movies.
Yeah, so that's the question now and the issue concerning Ben Affleck. Going back to HBO, HBO just changed the guard. Michael Lombardo, the head of the programming, was out. Casey Bloys was promoted very quickly from being head of comedy to being head of everything. And one of the first moves was to cancel an announced second season of Vinyl, another really expensive bet, huge names, Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger, obviously. These are signs that HBO is going to have to figure out what is going wrong. And, of course, Bill Simmons is part of what they hope will be the solution.
Yeah, I mean, Casey Bloys now has a rebuilding effort to do at HBO. And from what we are told, the cancellation of Vinyl was in large part to, and in many ways, clean the slate of something that was not received very well. But another reason was to free up some money to produce other shows. I mean, Vinyl is extraordinarily expensive. The first season costs about $100 million. And I think the thinking there is they can better invest that money into some new programming that this new programming chief can put his stamp on, rather than just extending this Vinyl narrative that probably is not going to be positive.
I mean, I have to admit, I was surprised they announced. I almost took the very quick announcement of a second season as just an ad, kind of a vote of confidence after the premiere of it was not that well received. But now it's clear, you know, we've talked before about how HBO has stuff all over the place that is very expensive, some of which has not made it to air, a couple of David Fincher series and so on. So we're going to see whether HBO can write that. They haven't had a drama hit since Game of Thrones. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Every episode in the new Netflix comedy series Lady Dynamite is divided into past, present, and Duluth. In the past, comedian Maria Bamford plays a version of her former self as she navigates her life and career in Hollywood. In the Duluth segments, she plays the same character while she's in treatment for her newly diagnosed bipolar 2 back home in Minnesota. In the present, Bamford's character is back in Los Angeles, well-medicated and struggling to keep her balance. In one of the past segments, a doctor played by Andy Daly recognizes that Bamford may be in need of medical intervention.
You say diagnosis, I say diagnosis, diagnosis, diagnosis. No, I'm on antidepressants. I have been since I was 19. Oh. And it's like because I had thoughts of suicide all the time. And I still do, but it's under control. It's not like I think I'm an angel. When I'm swimming, I'm an angel. I'm a swim angel, and that's a swim gel. I love words.
You know, you're exhibiting a lot of the symptoms of someone who might benefit from being on a mood stabilizer.
In real life, Bamford really did take a break to deal with her mental illness. That came in the midst of a busy career as a stand-up and a voiceover artist. She also appeared as a deranged shopper in a series of Target ads.
The Target two-day sale starts soon, and I feel like I have OCD, obsessive Christmas disorder. But I know it's just the holiday spirit coursing through my body and into my heart and up into my red and green brain.
Our guests today are Bamford as well as Pam Brady, co-creator of Lady Dynamite. Bamford has been on the show before, 5 years ago, when she and two other comics talked about dealing with the challenges of finding steady work. Little did we know, at the time, Bamford had other problems.
2011, well, that was about when I was, I think around the time I was kind of going mental, so
okay.
Maybe that's why I don't remember it.
So it was pre what we'd call Duluth?
Duluth, yeah. And I didn't actually go home to Duluth. I actually stayed in Los Angeles, so that was fictional part.
That's made up.
The show.
Okay.
Made up. Yeah, so
Glendale Adventist. I've been through their outpatient program here twice. I got a certificate both times, signed by all the therapists.
Okay.
Makes you feel pretty good.
Mm, yeah, I would say. So, so if you're taking a break or feeling it necessary, finding it imperative to take a break, is there a voice in your head saying, I'm going to lose everything I fought for? And or is it just at a place where you can't listen at all to that voice because everything's too overwhelming?
No, I was terrified just for probably about a year and a half, just feeling like I was scared. Because people say, oh, well, it takes a while to find the right medication cocktail. But in the meantime, your brain is not functioning properly, and you don't, I didn't even have like a sense of self really. You know, like I had this sort of screaming metallic sound in my head in terms of emotional state. I wasn't really there. So I was quite frightened about trying to get to go back to work. And I was very lucky to. I mean, obviously, I have very good health insurance through the union. And, you know, I have the best of all circumstances when somebody has a breakdown. Like, my family's super supportive. You know, I had friends come visit me every day in the psych ward, which is a great memory now in retrospect. And yes, some people who are, you know, just people who have everyday jobs, it's a lot more serious. You know, where stand-up, all I had to do was kind of get it together for an hour at a time at night. And, I wasn't able to do that for a while, but now, yeah, it's a great it's a great schedule and a great community, stand-up is. And
had you done the Target ads when you were on the show before, or was that still coming?
I think I may have done them. Yes, I think I had them.
I mean, those are like a gift they give for a long time, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was 3 years. And yeah, and I think part of me going a little bit off the wall was the reason that campaign may have stopped. I'm not entirely sure, but me talking about it publicly and saying that I wasn't certain about the Target empire may have attributed.
Did you do that?
To the, yes, whoops.
Oops. I'll stay with this for another second. Is there something about doing Target ads that is sort of a big drag aside? I mean, it's steady money, I'm sure, but.
Well, from what I've heard from actors, like, it's a lot easier to act and play a character and feel like, oh, I'm acting, this is my job. And the advertising, I'm not attached to that. But for me as a comedian, I've, you know, worked for 20 years being able to say whatever I want about anything. And then for me to say, even if it's in a goofy, ironic, over-the-top character telling people how great it is to shop, mm-hmm. even though I, myself, on a personal level, feel like that's the last thing anyone needs to do, and I have been wearing this pair of pants for a week. I in fact, think that's it. Consumerism is a terrible problem in our country, especially having a low price that's a false low price. What's that called when they say?
Artificially depressed.
Artificially depressed price so that we're all kept busy accumulating things. So for me to say, oh, not only going against what I believe in, but I'm also not able to talk about it at all.
But that's what was so subversive. I can't believe that ad campaign existed, because people who
I can't either,
get Maria
actually.
Got that she was mocking consumerism inside an ad, which is promoting consumerism. Like, it was the most meta campaign I've ever seen.
Because I just looked
brilliant.
At them again in the last day or so, and I was like, they did this?
It was brilliant.
But it was also, you know, in that way, it was also slightly evil, because it's like buying into the whole, you know, sort of the liberal aspect of going, oh, we get the joke.
Yeah. Wink, right. Wink.
Wink, wink. Right. And frankly, I think one of the only things that separates Target from Walmart is its marketing and its design. And
yes, the design is very, the semiotics of it all, whatever, are like, this is cool, and we're not exploiting the workers.
Yeah, but they are,
cool.
You know, or they are, you know.
Especially that dog.
Especially that dog. That, well, I think the dog's being paid union rates.
You know, that was possibly part of the agglomeration of things.
Yes, yes, yeah, for sure.
The funny thing is, when you were here, we have a thing in the beginning of the show called the news banter. We talk about whatever's going on in the moment. And we talked on that particular episode of this show about the fact that Netflix had just announced a deal with Kevin Spacey and David Fincher, and they were going to make a show.
Oh, House of Cards!
Which turned out to be House of Cards. And it's like, Who knew?
It's been such a, whatever this is, this renaissance, this golden age of content. I'm so grateful because I don't think 10 years ago I would have been able to get any TV show at all. I don't think I have a big enough fan base or...
Well, they would have tampered with it.
Yes, it would have been modified.
You would have been like a fun office exec or just working for an ad company and just having a lot of dating trouble.
Or a side character, which I have played a few times before, sort of the desperate, lonely, weird
kooky
woman. Kooky.
Wacky sidekick.
Could you kook it up a little bit on this one?
So, Pam.
Yeah.
So you come from Matt Stone and Trey Parker land, mm-hmm. South Park, Team America, right?
That's true.
And I was a little confused because I started watching the show and it said created by Mitch Hurwitz and you. And I thought, but it's Maria. So how does that, she's shaking her head. Maria's shaking her head. Like, no, it's not me.
We have real legal problems over this.
No. I didn't have any interest really in writing and I'm not a script writer. I've tried to do that before and it's just, I find it like an interminable math problem. So I was just extremely grateful to hand it over. So they did the lion's share of any work, and I just ate salads.
She's crazy.
Yeah.
I was going to say that she's this one. Yeah, exactly. You're literally crazy. But it was such a – the process was such a funny process because, first of all, for Maria to trust us is such a supreme act of faith.
Well, roll because back to the genesis.
Mitch Hurwitz, he had hired me to do the role of Debris.
Debris is the greatest name.
Yes, on Arrested Development. And we met a number of times. He said, what kind of idea would you be interested in working on? And I thought, I am always interested in talking about mental health and making that more of a – and something I was still trying to handle was how to come back to work and have a balance, like, because before I was all work, you know, traveling internationally, like taking every single job because what if? And you're so lucky to get anything,
right,
any job. But my psychiatrist did not think that was advisable. Mm-hmm. So
let me just pause for one. Did you know before you started being on that treadmill that you had this issue or potentially had this issue? Or was it like a surprise?
I had depression and I had had some problems with OCD. And maybe subconsciously I was concerned about it because women in my family, my mom has had a psychotic break. So I think I was concerned about that. And I also think bipolar 1 was well known, and then now they have it bipolar 2, where there's more depression and then hypomania with no psychosis, but sort of a mixed state of agitation, like having a ton of energy while being depressed.
Okay.
Which is a terrible combo.
Terrible.
And so... Yeah, I met with Mitch, and then I think he has an overall deal with Netflix, and so we kept talking, and then he had always wanted to work with Pam.
Did you know him, Pam?
He gave me my first writing job on the John Larroquette show.
Oh, my goodness. Going back.
So I owe a lot to Mitch.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I just wanted to meet Maria because I was a huge fan of hers and I was working on other stuff and he's like, well, we're going to get a show at Netflix. I'm like, I just have to meet her. And the first meeting with you was so incredible because Maria's done so much work on herself. And there's so much bravery. And she's so funny.
It's like, kind of a hobby. I like to do emotional Sudoku. It's like,
okay.
Not sure if I've changed discernibly in 25 years, but I'm still puzzles. I like to do the puzzles.
We had this like 2-hour meeting that, seriously, I felt like my brain was like unscrewed, put back in. I remember I had a dinner on Sepulveda and I even said to Mitch, I'm like, is Sepulveda in the valley or is it at the beach?
Both?
I actually had no idea where I was going. You just completely scrambled me in a really good way.
Coming up after a short break, Maria Bamford tells us why she wanted someone else to write a TV show about her life. And Pam Brady tells us how she did it. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. When you were young, you had so many hopes
and dreams about the future. Check out KCRW's all news channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, BBC, and more 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24 or listen on KCRW's app.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to comedian Maria Bamford, star of the new Netflix series Lady Dynamite, and Pam Brady, co-creator of the show. Lady Dynamite is not so loosely based on Bamford's life, her career, her mental illness, and her return to work after taking a break to seek treatment. On the show, when Bamford's medications make her tired, her agent tells her to stop taking them. At first, she does feel more energized, as she explains breathlessly to her dogs, Blossom and Bert.
Good morning, Blossom. I love you so much. Good morning, Bert. I love you so much. You guys, I do feel better now that I'm off my meds. I feel supercharged. I don't need drugs, because I got
In time, Bamford crashes hard before finding her way back to a more balanced life. The idea for Lady Dynamite took shape after showrunner Mitch Hurwitz pitched the absurdist comedy to Ted Sarandos, the head of content at Netflix. Executive producer Pam Brady picks up the story from there.
Mitch went to Ted Sarandos and said, hey, what about Maria Bamford? And Ted said, I'll do that show right now. And that just shows, isn't he? Can
it's well, nice. Ted Sarandos was I was on the first production that was funded by Netflix, which was The Comedians of Comedy. It was the first documentary film that they made.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So I've known Ted for a long time.
You actually knew him
too.
Even from that.
So we kept talking, and I'm because if you've lived in Los Angeles for 25, you know, you like show business is like a friend with a drinking problem. Like, you just don't count on it. Like, don't think that anything right. will happen. Just go, oh,
they're super fun in the moment.
It's
but,
fun, yeah.
Were they going to show up at that dinner we planned?
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. So, but it kept working out. And
yeah.
kept, being, and we kept getting support, I think, from Netflix to keep going. And Mitch made a huge, gorgeous, tiered outline of the before, during, and after the mental breakdown storylines. And
it was like mapping the human genome.
It really sounds, I would imagine.
Because we just, you know, had it in chapters, and Mitch, you know, has this brain that he can just move stuff around and puzzle pieces. And we knew we wanted to tell the story of Maria's recovery. So we thought if we told three stories and we sort of linked them thematically, that it would be more powerful because people would want to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And I guess it's sort of, you know, it was also such a funny process because even Dorian were like, is this going to work?
Yeah.
Is this going to work? I don't know.
Well, it is very not anything that there's a real antecedent for that I can think of. Even Arrested Development is more linear than this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Right? And I think it's really a tribute. And I like to say things to Maria and make her uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because I treasure our friendship. But she's so brilliant. And you care about her so much that I think that you want to be on the trip with her and go, okay, wait, we're back in Duluth. What's happening now? But she's so real that you believe her, you care about her. And I think that's the key to the whole show.
And I think my stand-up is pretty jarring from what I've heard. I don't like to explain things. I remember that was one note I got from a comic backstage in Vegas once. Like, you got to tell people their voices in my head and all these people are talking through me. Why?
Right. Subtitles.
Let somebody else figure it out.
So how do you write Maria, though? I mean, do you write Maria?
Oh, you definitely write Maria. But our version of Maria is sort of a funhouse mirror Maria.
Yeah, yeah,
because this was the fun process. Like, we would sit in the writer's room, and Maria would come in with a story like, what's a good story? Like, No Friend Left Behind. So
yes.
She had a theory about No Friend Left Behind.
Los Angeles is filled with people telling you, you know, if that person's just toxic, you know, just let it go. They're draining your energy. You know, I'm just moving away
boundary.
From these.
You need a boundary.
And it's like, okay. I have abandoned so many friendships. 2004, I declared it No Friend Left Behind.
Wow,
act.
That is amazing.
Everybody's coming home.
I have to confess, there have been friends left behind.
Well, that was our argument too, which is what's fun about this process, is that Maria tells us this great thing, and then we, in our cynicism, say, well, maybe there are some friends that should be left behind. And what if you decide to inaugurate this theory on the one friend that really needs to be left behind?
So you play like that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then do you literally write the dialogue, like script, memorize that stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. We would work on the script as a group. Everybody got Maria, and it was like we had a Borg brain. But we also had the benefit of like, okay, so we write a script, and then Maria would come in.
They'd run it by me and go, oh, is that what you would say? Or, you know, and that was so fun, you know, because then I just go in and go, well, actually, this is what happened, or I would say that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, part of the other side of I'm not able to do as much. You know, like now in my life, for realsies, I probably only do like one or two things a day. I've turned down a lot of work, much more so than I used to, because I'd rather live within my means and, you know, not
stay away from Target
and stay away from, you know, that whole thing of like, oh, well, you gotta just gotta keep making money. Cause I don't think money is obviously, or hasn't been the answer for me anyways, cause I was making a huge amount of money and it would, but it was hilarious because now I was wanting to take things slower, and that was the time when I got a TV show.
Well, this was what, and we basically are doing a TV show to celebrate the triumph of Maria overcoming this idea of a false engine, which is I'm going to do everything because I'm not sure what I should be doing, and we basically work her 18 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, so if it's an 18-hour day,
yeah,
it was a max of 15 hours, and then usually it was 12. It was I had 12 hours, and then I also got a 12-hour minimum turnaround.
But you know how it's always like, it'll be a 6-hour day. We'll shoot it like Modern Family. You'll be out by 4. And then the first week, we're like, oh, God.
The first week was totally 18 hours. Yeah. It's like,
well, so with this schedule that is not as easy as you said, I wonder, Pam, for you, I mean, did you feel like, well, Maria, you know, she could be a little frail and I'm worried about her?
Yeah.
You did.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Because you're kind of wiped out by the meds you're on.
Yeah.
So Maria, really, we tried to make sure Maria had at least an hour, right?
Yeah,
to take a nap.
Which saved me. I mean, there's just no way I could have done it. That the meds that I'm on, have I mentioned how many?
You mentioned there were meds. So
1,000 milligrams of Depakote, which is an anti-seizure medication and mood stabilizer. 50 milligrams of Seroquel, an antipsychotic. And 40 milligrams of Prozac, which is an antidepressant. And all of those, they have side effects of drowsiness.
I'm amazed you're awake right now.
So, but the wonderful thing about it, because it is a mood stabilizer, is I feel genuinely very content and happy. For the past 4 years, I've not had any depression, maybe some light agitation, my husband will tell you, but I think about normal things. Like,
it's kind of a trope in these shows, you know, that the person goes off their meds and then all hell breaks loose, and you have no impulse to go off your meds.
Oh, my God, no. Oh, my God. I would much rather, if it means that I am not as sharp a comedian or not as edgy or whatever, not producing as much, who cares?
Right.
Who cares?
So there is no other, I mean, we are in the peak TV era, but there's nobody else doing this besides Netflix, is there?
This show could not exist any other place. I mean, there are places that are cool and experimental, but they're so willing to give us a shot and also encourage us.
Yeah, there was so much positive support. And this, just because I've just been on sitcoms every once in a while, and there's just like, you feel sort of negative energy, like, or just people going, oh boy, we need to put can we get any padding on her breasts? Can she do that line again? And there was none of that like feeling of like, oh, we're not doing enough. And they were always just very positive, like, we love it.
They're there?
Yeah. They were there.
The positivity was unbelievable. And they have a culture of like, we're playing outside the rules. We're creating our own rules. We know what we like. We don't have to prove anything to anybody. And we trust ourselves, and they empower their executives. So the executives come, that's funny, that's weird. And a couple times we're like, is this too far? And they're like, no, go farther.
Pam Brady is the co-creator, and Maria Bamford is the star of Lady Dynamite. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for
having us. It's
great
talking to you.
Yay.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.